I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, Russia's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine has changed the nature of warfare. Ukraine's use of low-cost drones means the old strategies are no longer effective. These modern high-tech gizmos are delivering bombs deep into Russia with pinpoint accuracy, and the world is watching and learning. How could the United States defend itself against mass drone attacks? That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Later in the hour, we're going to hear about climate change and the big flash flood that we've experienced along the upper Guadalupe River. But first, what happens when drones that can cost a couple of $1,000s are capable of blowing up tanks, heavy artillery, and parked aircraft worth many, many millions of dollars? That's what's been happening in the last 3 years in Ukraine in the fight against Russia's unprovoked invasion. Ukraine has changed the game. They are deploying drone swarms deep into Russia and wiping out critical infrastructure. Russia is also using drones for its bombing of Ukraine's civilian areas. And the two sides have been in a battle of technology, trying to outsmart each other with countermeasures and new attack strategies. The world is watching and learning because this is the new face of warfare. And the United States needs to prepare to defend itself against a similar drone swarm attack, because that could be another 9/11. We're joined by Evelyn Farkas. She is the former U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, now Executive Director of the McCain Institute. And Evelyn, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much, David. It's a pleasure.
Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you've got a question or comment about what you've been seeing with these drones and their attacks and countermeasures and what the future looks like for warfare. So, Evelyn, it's great to have you, and I really appreciate your expertise and your outspokenness on this issue. What is the United States seeing happening here? Are we on the ground? Are we learning directly? Are we just observers with what's happening with this war?
Well, David, obviously, we don't have troops on the ground, but we have an embassy in Ukraine. We have, of course, intelligence officers in the country, and we're working very closely to provide Ukraine with intelligence, with advice, and with weaponry. So undeniably, we are learning from them, you know, almost on the scene, not of course on the scene because we don't want to be in the battlefield, but because so much of it is actually being orchestrated from behind the battle lines, way back behind, I think we're probably getting a pretty good sense.
Well, other countries, China, North Korea, Turkey, Iran, they're all very much involved on the Russian side trying to learn on-the-job training about this new drone warfare. So there seems to be a lot going on there.
Right. I mean, this has gained a huge amount of attention, especially after the recent attack that the Ukrainians launched against Russian air assets, so against airfields and aircraft deep inside Russia, using drones that they had placed inside Russia months ago clandestinely, and then launching them in a concerted effort and a concerted attack. And that, which the Ukrainians refer to this attack as the spider webs attack. And this was something that captured the attention of the world because it was so dramatic, because it was done so quietly and effectively. And, you know, the element of surprise was real, and not only in Moscow, but as you mentioned, in capitals all over the world, because the implications are that any weaker military power can use these drones, provided they have good intelligence and good operations, get them into a place inside a country close to an important strategic asset, and use them against a stronger state like the United States, or in this case, Russia.
Yeah, that June 1st spider web attack has been talked about as being a watershed moment, and when people realized the game has changed. People had thought about drones as maybe a support in warfare. Originally, they were observational. They were surveillance. They were scouting. Then they started dropping hand grenades and bombs and things on units. And now drones are becoming the front line. They are the point of the spear in warfare. What difference does that make?
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. I mean, they're being used to take out targets that could bring about strategic effect, meaning it could change the tide of the war. So it's not just, you know, an operational advantage, or in the case of the drones that are taking out individual soldiers, because they're still doing that on the battlefield, you know, that's very tactical. That will get you a little bit of advantage, but just a limited advantage. Operational is a bigger advantage, more long-term. And strategic is, again, literally potentially game-changing. The fact that the Russians were able to take out these multi-million dollar aircraft, which were used, you know, to launch ballistic missiles and to launch attacks against the Ukrainian people and Ukrainian territory, was significant. Of course, the Russians have many more assets, so it wasn't an actual strategic turning point in that sense. Although I do believe that looking back at the end of this war, it will be seen as a turning point.
So they also bombed Russia's nuclear bombers. They wiped out a number of them, weakens their nuclear offensive capability worldwide, including targeting the United States with those assets. So in a way, I guess they did the U.S. a favor?
They did. I mean, all along, the Ukrainians have been doing the United States and its allies a favor, make no mistake. Because the United States, at very little cost, and I think Senator Lindsey Graham once put it at like less than 3% of the annual U.S. defense budget, you know, we have been providing, which is the assistance we provided to Ukraine. In exchange for that very small amount of money, relatively speaking, the Ukrainians have really significantly weakened the Russian military. And the Russian military, the Russian government, is our adversary. They have essentially declared political war on NATO. And we are afraid that they would, if they prevail in Ukraine, turn against our NATO allies as well militarily. And the advantage is not just to our allies in Europe. Let's not forget that Japan also is a neighbor of Russia, and that China is an ally of Russia. So the impact of what we're doing to weaken Russia is really global.
How esoteric is this? Well, I don't want to ask you this now because we're going to hit to a break really soon, but have you been surprised with what you've seen?
I was surprised with the spider web attack, but one thing doesn't surprise me, that the Ukrainians, whenever it looks like, you know, there's a stalemate on the ground, that things are not moving in their direction, or again, that they're stuck, they will pull a rabbit out of a hat. I mean, they will seize the initiative, either diplomatically, often militarily. You remember they also occupied a part of Russia, the Kursk region, yeah. I guess about a year and a half ago. You know, that these moves are not surprising to me. The particulars of this one was.
So when Donald Trump says, Ukraine, you have no cards, he was wrong.
The Ukrainians always have cards.
They're pulling out cards all over the place, and apparently they have a lot to play. So when I come back, what I wanted to ask you about was this technology. How esoteric is this technology? Is how different this is from the drones that I would buy at my big box store? You know, could anyone weaponize these drones and use them, or does it have to be a nation state? I mean, there's a lot going on here. It's very fluid. It's very active. And we have to start thinking proactively in how do we defend ourselves against this technology. What's to keep someone from flying a drone over Times Square and dropping, you know, explosive devices over people? Who knows? We got to start thinking about this before, before disaster happens. So we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break and our phone lines are open. I'm going to get Eric on the air. He's on the board. And the number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues after this.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Public media is facing one of the most serious threats in its history. The U.S. Senate has voted to eliminate $1.1 billion in funding, putting trusted news, meaningful storytelling, and thoughtful journalism at risk. The Senate votes this week, and you can still contact your senators every day until they do. Tell them to reject these cuts and protect TPR. Visit tpr.org/resiliency to take action today.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the next half hour, we're going to be talking about climate change. What part did it play in the recent flooding events here in San Antonio and also up in Kerr County? But right now we're talking about drones, modern warfare, these new weapons, and how they are changing war and how they could change national defense. You can call in. Your number is 833-877-8255. And we're having a conversation with Evelyn Farkas. She is the current executive director of the McCain Institute. Let's go to Eric. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi. Question for your guest. So it's maybe been about 2 years since Ukraine saw some success on the Black Sea with a surface-to-surface drone where they took out a Russian corvette. And I was curious to see what their commentary was on the prevalence moving forward on those types of drones. Is that something that we're going to see a lot more moving forward, especially certain choke points around the world, especially the, around the Arabian Sea and stuff, Suez Canal? I'll go ahead and take my answer off of here.
All right. Thank you, Eric. So the democratization of this type of weaponry has been talked about because it's so low cost, and it's just a matter of time before smaller militia type agencies are able to get hold of it and use it for terror objectives. Do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a real danger. And I thank Eric for the question. The I don't see an immediate threat from terrorist groups necessarily, but there are countries that have good drone capabilities already that are very worried about large adversaries. And now I'm thinking of Taiwan, who are looking very closely at this and looking to develop their own drone capabilities. So certainly weaker countries that can't afford, the large aircraft carriers, the submarines, the deep strike weaponry, air weaponry, these countries would look at the drone option as a way to asymmetrically, relatively low cost, hold off an invading force. And it is possible that, of course, the technology can become, mastered by lots of other groups. And that really points then to the need for international regulation, the rules. We do have laws of war and rules governing how you fight. And certainly we have protection for civilians, which Russia is ignoring every day. But we need to, this is probably a real wake-up call to understand what the stakes are and how civilians could really suffer with the increased use of these weapons. And then the other thing is, of course, from the U.S. perspective, we need to make sure that we can defend our airspace, and we need to make sure we regulate the use of drones and the technologies that can be put on drones.
So how different are the drones that are being used by Ukraine, say, for their first person? They turn the drone itself into a bomb, and they have a person sitting in a bunker somewhere looking at it through goggles like they're playing a video game, and they fly at a tank or something. How different are those drones than, say, a drone that I would buy at a big box store, has a little goggle thing that I could put on, I can fly it around the neighborhood? This morning I was out running around the park, and some guy's doing that exact same thing, flying a drone. How different are those two things?
Well, I'm not a technology expert. My doctorate is in political science, so I'm not an engineer. But, there's a difference in terms of what you can do with the drone, how much control you have over it, whether it has a memory, an ability to record, to wait. Certainly the spider web drones waited until there was a command, so they were remotely controllable. And then there was a high level of sophistication in terms of the targeting capability that, you wouldn't have necessarily a targeting capability on your drone that you're using in your backyard. So there definitely is a whole nother level of sophistication. There's also the need to miniaturize all of those capabilities, although that probably already exists in the commercial arena to some extent.
One of the countermeasures that's being used has been blocking the signal. So that there, if there is a guy operating the drone in some faraway bunker, he's flying it remotely, then the drone enters an area where they're able to block that signal, and then the drone basically is inert. So is that something that is being, you know, talked about deploying, making those types of blocks, signal blockers available in the United States?
I mean, that's really important in the context of Russia-Ukraine first. The Russians actually have the upper hand here. They have been much better at electronic jamming, so using their signals to stop these drones in their tracks. Certainly in the United States, we need to look at this because we need to make sure that we can defend, first and foremost, you know, putting on my national security hat, U.S. military installations from any kind of attack, whether it's from an individual drone or swarms of drones. Same then for critical infrastructure, electric, power, water, you know, all of the critical things that we rely on for our public safety and in order to maintain the health and well-being of our society. So these things must be defended against by, you know, passive systems that can jam those drones.
Well, we're about to enter in civilian life, you know, drones flying around from Amazon dropping off prescriptions, and just they're just going to be in the air all over the place soon. It's not like if you see a drone flying across the sky that's you're going to read that as a national security threat. You're just going to see that as part of day-to-day life.
That's possible, but again, I think it calls for a need for regulation. You know, people, when they talk about technology, they'll go back in history and they'll say, you know, when the automobile was invented, they didn't even know they needed a stop sign, you know, until they started hitting pedestrians, you know. So, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to see the need for, and we already see, of course, in the Ukraine context, but elsewhere, we're going to see the need for regulation and safety standards. So I don't think you will see, you know, drones just willy-nilly flying over airspace in the United States in the future.
So one of the regulations that they want to do is prevent AI in the drones. They want to at least make sure that there's always a human involved in the loop before it attacks someone. How concerned should we be about AI being unleashed on drones so we don't end up with Terminator type stuff?
I think that is a deep concern for many people. We don't want to have AI controlled drones. There always needs to be a human making a decision. Why? Because we are people who believe in the rights of individuals. We believe as humans that others have rights, that we must treat humans as humans. And that means that you don't use drones against innocent civilians, etc. So you need regulation, you need rules that the AI, you know, because they don't have morality, the AI doesn't have morality unless I guess we teach it to have our morality. They will not be able to exercise morality in the use of any weapon.
I've seen, looking at footage in Ukraine, that some infantry will have, it looks like a shotgun that will fire maybe like an electromagnetic pulse or something that they could aim it at a drone in order to disable it. How expensive is it to get those types of things? Should law enforcement have those in the United States?
Well, again, I would say, first of all, I would be very cautious about transferring something for military use into law enforcement. The standards for use of force in law enforcement are very different from the standards for use of force on the battlefield. I will speak as somebody who understands the defense world, you know, to say that certainly on the battlefield, as long as the soldier, sailor, you know, Marine can see the airman, can see the target and understands what the target is, then that kind of weapon is completely valid for use, and there's no problem with it per se. Again, it comes down to the fact that when you have a war, you have rules of engagement, and the military personnel will understand what those rules of engagement are in utilizing any weapon.
I've seen some drones that are extremely small, like the size of a computer mouse, flying around and using those as a countermeasure or scouting, all sorts of miniaturization of drones for defensive purposes seems like a development.
Right. I mean, there's also nanotechnology, surveillance possibilities out there in the future. And again, this comes back to the need for regulation. There may be very good, valid uses for these types of mini drones, either the size of a mouse or the size of a gnat. But we need to make sure that they are harnessed, for good and to either defend our democracy.
Or to counter someone who doesn't have good intention. Let's go to Javier on the phone. And Javier, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, how you doing, Dave? Hey, I was wanting to tell your speaker there, talking about, hey, we need to be careful, the U.S., and, defending ourselves and against the drones. But I'm thinking to myself, hey, Trump's already given all that information to Putin. That's Putin's boy,
Right.
And if the Ukrainians should really put Russia down and out, why right now that they got them on the ropes, Jesus, yeah. Just take them out, get the Navy and get Crimea back.
Javier, thank you for the call. We appreciate that. So in that term, we've seen Donald Trump, he adopted, I don't know how hard of a line and a long deadline, and he's, showing some pushback to Putin, but it remains to be seen how sincere that stance is going to be. What is your take on that?
Well, I agree with Javier that basically this is an opportunity now. Putin is potentially on the ropes. If President Trump continues, really arming Ukraine and getting the arms out there quickly, and then ratchets up economic pressure. I know he's put a pause on that, but if he ratchets that up and increases the diplomatic isolation, which he doesn't seem willing to do yet, but if he really puts pressure on Putin, that's the key to bringing this war to an end, because the Ukrainians don't want it to go on. But Putin right now thinks that if it continues, it will go his way.
It seems like China is doing a lot more to support Russia, particularly in the development of its own drones and manufacturing of its own drones, than people are willing to acknowledge publicly. Why is that?
I don't know why, because we certainly have the intelligence. I've seen a lot of reporting, just some casual reporting in the news, but the real details, our intelligence community, our officials know. And China has been key. I've heard people make statements that without China, Russia would not be able to continue to wage the war. I think I've heard Europeans make that statement, and I wish our European allies and, frankly, our Asian allies, if they have intelligence on this, that they would also reveal this to the American public, because there's a lack of appreciation. It's not just the fact that the Chinese are buying, a significant proportion of Russia's oil and therefore providing, money into the Russian
and chips, capital. Computer chips for their own.
That's right. It's the technology. It's the know-how and the items that we do not want Russia to have in order to continue to be able to fight militarily that China is providing. That is a real significant advantage. And if we could stop the Chinese, that would also be another way to bring this war to an end faster.
Well, we're almost out of time here, but do you think that many people in national defense understand that we have to be taking a drone attack against the United States seriously, and we have to be doing things now to prevent another 9/11?
I think undeniably they have to understand, given what happened you know, with the Ukrainian attack on Russia using these drones, it was so dramatic that you have to have been, you know, comatose not to understand this, the significance for the U.S. from the defense perspective.
Evelyn Farkas is the current executive director of the McCain Institute, former U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. Thank you so much for talking to us today. Appreciate this.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.